a lot of people are fashionable, meaning that they'll hop on the trends like Balenciaga shoes, Yeezys, or whatever, because they see other people wear it. But is it actually their style? Style is different. Like, you can see someone that doesn't wear all that hype shit and they're stylish.
You're listening to All In, a podcast brought to you by The Refined Gentleman's Lifestyle Lounge, powered by Podcast Network Asia. In this episode, Noel sits down and talks to Brent Javier. Brent has worked in all aspects of fashion, from modeling, styling, to being the co-owner of a multi-brand streetwear store, The Nines. Listen to his story as he navigates the world of business and creative direction in his new role at boutique consulting agency and PR firm, Next Theory. This is All In.
What's going on there, bud? How's engaged life? Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been like the last 90 days, pretty much. I mean, we've been together 24/7 for, over 90 days now. And it's good.
That's no complaint. Crazy. That's so crazy. I know my girlfriend said the same thing. It's like, oh my God, we've been stuck in the house for like 90 days together. That's like that show, 90 days.
Yeah, right? we heavily watch, that's on rotation too. We watch it every Sunday.
Man, we're so addicted to that show, man. Oh my God. We watch that. I love the car accidents, man. I love the car crashes in that show. You know, I think this season, the one I've been seeing so far, it's kind of boring, but it's also compared to all the crazy ones with, what's his name? No Neck Ed.
And
Rose.
Rat was crazy, man. That he was taking care with.
I would lose my shit. I have a huge phobia for mice and especially rats. It's like,
but they always do that in the Philippines. Show the shit side of it. Like,
well, that's you know what? That's a really good point, because that's one of my pet peeves is you know. Everyone, you know, when moving to the Philippines, people from Toronto, not all, but a lot, would say, why are you moving to a third world country? Because all they know of the Philippines is what Sally Struthers at 2 o'clock in the morning asking you to donate because I have this little baby with flies in the eyes. And they don't know that. That is the Philippines, and it's not the Philippines.
Like, exactly.
Obviously different, and that's what I think hopefully everyone here is trying to work towards to eradicate, is to fix that problem, because it's a big problem. And yeah, man, it's kind of crazy. Like, again, I don't like that, the rats, and but I saw them, like, why are they showing that? Because they're showing like that, that's how, like, actually all the I think there's been three Filipinas from 90 days.
This is the first season I started watching. So like,
oh really? No. The other, there's been a couple of them, Philippine, and the same situation, you know, living in a poor area, and even the filming when they're walking around, it's in like the Visoria, you know what I mean? Where it's like, and it's like, why don't you film me BGC? Check that out.
Yeah, because my cousins that were born in the Philippines or haven't gone back in like 20 years. When they see the Philippines too, that's how they're exposed to it. And it's like, I'm telling them to come visit, and like, they're seeing that, and it's like, they don't want to come visit anymore.
Yeah. I'm not the person to say, hey, you know what, hide all that stuff, you know, because that is reality. You know, leaving yesterday, we went for a ride. We had to go. I had a meeting, and me and my girlfriend took a drive over there, and we were looking at, you know, coming out of our neighborhood and then going outside and then realizing, wow, it's such a change. Like, it's a 180 degree change, and seeing the way other people live. And, you know, for me, it's like, it motivates us to do our part and help out. But there's also, we have to show equally the other side, that there's a lot of movement and progression here. And that's why I think you're there. That's why I'm here. That's why there's a lot of foreigners, but like Bayans are coming back to the Philippines to set up roots, set up businesses, you know, to take a chance. It's not because we don't like Toronto. You know, that's one thing we have in common, is that we're both from Toronto, and that's where you are right now. We love Toronto, but there's something about the Philippines. I don't know what it is. What is it for you?
I mean, obviously I've thought of this question. I guess it's just the opportunity. For me, I feel like there's more opportunity. The capital doesn't cost, like, I mean, if you have an idea and you want to like incubate it here in Toronto, it costs a lot more. Mm-hmm. Where as in the Philippines, it's not that hard to get an idea going, to get legs and start it off. And, you know, you can start off with $2,000 and you can run with that. You know?
Yeah, for sure. I think, yeah.
$2,000 in Canada is like,
not even a week. Not even,
yeah.
But the one thing that Canada does have, which I miss, is they have entrepreneurial programs at the banks, like small business loans from Canada, that, you know, you can easily get a loan, a business loan, show your business plan to the bank people, the people that's, you know, working on it. And I've done that twice and got approved twice and was able to set up my business pretty quickly because they believe that entrepreneurship, small businesses is the engine that drives the machine, right? So I feel like that's, they need to start implementing that, or somebody has to jump on that and say, you know what, now that this pandemic is happening, a lot of people lost their jobs. And usually when you lose your job, one of the first options is start your own business. So to jumpstart the economy, I think hopefully the banks, and I'm not sure, obviously they're not doing this, but to really start, you know what, let's start investing in the small businesses, and because that is going to drive it, man. Like if there's a lot of us, you know, giving, like for us, we had at the highest, I think we had 15 employees. I mean, that's 15 employees that normally wouldn't have work, right? So we're doing our part and multiply that by other businesses. And, you know, that's really putting a lot of money into the Philippines and the taxes and the government, you know, to help the poor, right? So that's one thing I do miss about Canada is that program. But you're right. The simplicity of getting it started is good here. I mean, with a small budget. So is that like, but that wasn't really your main focus when you moved to the Philippines. Was it to start business or was something else? Which I already know the answer.
Yeah. Are we taping? Is this?
yeah. It's recording, man. Okay. It's recording. We're good.
Well, I mean, I've shared the story a couple times, but I really, to be honest, I was academically suspended for a year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I told you this story, but I was academically suspended for a year and my dad's a doctor. So, you know, that's like a little bit of that's not what a doctor's son is supposed to get into.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So basically I took a year off because I was suspended and I went to the Philippines and I used to be an athlete. Right. So I went to St. Mike's downtown. It's a sports school, not the choir school, because there's two. Well, people mistake them. I'm not going to say who mistakes them. But
You went to the hockey school.
Yeah. So great sports program. Like a lot of people go to Major League Baseball, NFL, basketball through their programs there. Hockey, obviously. So I was an athlete growing up. Like up to grade 10, I was like ranked in Ontario. I dropped drastically after grade 11 because I became cool, started smoking, started getting interested in girls, but I was really an athlete.
What sport? Basketball?
Basketball and volleyball. I won MVP for my high school in volleyball and I play basketball. So basically in university, second year, I was going to go to the Philippines to see if I could play there. Cause that was always something that I wanted to do. Like obviously NBA wasn't going to happen. Philippines, I'm taller than most, still not tall though. Like even if I match up against players there, I'm still one of the shorter ones at 5'10" shooting guard.
Yeah.
But, if I had progressed from grade 10 all the way through and just kept on getting better, then I think I would have had a chance. But, you know, reality was by the time I was second year university, I probably already peaked. So I went there for basketball.
Yeah.
To see anything would happen. And I came off an injury. I broke my wrist in the summer coming to the Philippines. So I put on a bunch of weight, and I was trying to lose all the weight, get back into shape before I could try out. And before all of that happened, I basically, like, in the Philippines, if you've ever been there and you're like Phil M or Phil Can or whatever, I feel like everyone that goes there, like, there's agents that used to like walk around malls, like modeling agents or managers. Yeah. I got approached like for like 6 months. Like, and I just say, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. And like, I remember even telling my friends before I left for here, they're like, oh, you're just going to go there and become like artista. I'm like, no, fuck that. Fuck that. I'm not going to do that. And then, you know, eventually it was a way to make money.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not the same anymore. The modeling industry is different now than it was before. But before, the paydays were great. Like, compared to now, it's like I can literally say about times 10. So you can get a lead commercial now, and they'll pay you like 50K. If you get into six figures already, like 100K, then that's already like considered decent. But like back then, it was like 250, 500.
Wow. It was way better.
Like, my biggest budget, like, I won't mention it, but like, it was up. And that's after I had reached a certain level of notoriety when I was, you know, I was popular at the time.
Yeah.
And it was good money. But, you know, the industry changed a lot. So
what changed in the industry though? Like, what was it? It's just more of a more Phil Am, Phil Can, European Filipinos coming in, trying to, you know, become models and actors.
I mean, for me, I had established myself. I put myself in a place where I was already, no matter what happened, I was going to get work. But the people coming up, I mean, no offense, right? But like, Brazilians sort of shattered the industry a little bit when they first started like coming into the industry, because, and this is not, I'm not speaking about all of them, but like, some of them would come in and do like fashion shows and take talent fees that were a lot lower.
Why wouldn't
they cast someone that's willing to do it like a lot lower? And then at the same time, I think shows like reality shows also started popping off, like Pinoy Big Brother. And they had them like all the time, right? So every time there'd be this new cycle of new faces that, you know, they weren't actually exceptional, a lot of them, but, you know, the show was such a good marketing tool for them that they became really hot really fast. And, you know, pretty much something, it went something like that, basically.
That's always been a problem in a lot of industries, especially when you guys are independent contractors, where somebody in your group lowballs and then changes the whole pay scale. I mean, we have that in advertising, kind of like, that's one thing you and I have in common as creative directors, is back in the day when you did freelance, there was an unwritten rule: do not take a job under this much, under this, you know, per hour, because as soon as you do that, it ruins it for everyone. And now every agency or any client's going to say, well, I got it for half of that, you know, and it really ruins it. And it's, and people, and there was blackballing. Like, people would get blackballed if they found out that you charge half of what the going rate is, right? And that, you know, I mean, and I understand people have to pay their bills and stuff, but you're basically ruining it. I mean, I've been hearing a lot of horror stories about the modeling and acting in the Philippines, and I don't know what's going to come out of it now with the pandemic. Like, is it going to readjust? Is it going to reset? Maybe this is the perfect time to fix it, you know, because, you know, nothing's going to be filming. Social distancing is going to be pretty difficult to film something. You know what I mean? So I'm hoping, because I, like, you're not the only one who told me this. Like, I've heard it, but that was, you know, I don't know. I met you, I'm trying to remember how many times we've met. Like, at the Refine, we will kind of bump into each other. You'll go in with Victoria
for
a meeting. But I never, you know, and I knew, you know, the way you look, obviously, but you never came across as like that person modeling, and that's what you want to do. Was you know, you went into it because it paid well.
Yeah.
Right.
As a guy, I went.
Yeah. But that's not your personality. Like, I know for me, like, when I do an interview or somebody wants to take a picture of me for the interview, I hate it. I don't even know how to smile. It's kind of like that, you know, Friends episode with Chandler when he doesn't have a smile. Like, it's just like, don't point that. Oh, man, I feel weird, right? Because I've always been a behind the camera when it comes to commercials and advertisement, right? So how did you train your mind to be in front of that camera when it wasn't really something that you wanted to do? It was kind of like, it was a good payday. How did you do it, man?
Well, I mean, during the time I was like 21 and it was fun. So like, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of rewards other than the money. Like, I mean, I got to meet a lot of new people. I lived in Thailand, Singapore, Hong Kong for a while through modeling. So there was cool stuff that was definitely attached to it. Like,
yeah.
I got a lot of free shit, even up to now, like people still toss me stuff.
But
I remember the first time I went to a VTR, like talking about that Chandler story from Friends, like I could not hold the smile. Like my face was like shaking. It hurt to hold it. So yeah, I'm naturally shy, but I mean, also there became a certain point when I was a different person. So like, even when I did Ramp, like there became a point where like in my head, I was like, I'm the fucking man when I'm walking on the ramp. Like, I don't know if it's corny, but I was just like, I own this shit. And like,
I love it.
It was different. Then when I got off, it was, you know, back to being me. But like during that 30 seconds or 1 minute of walking, I was like a different person.
Do you feel like that you carried that kind of mindset or that, you know, motivation now that you're not obviously doing Ramp and stuff, but you're like, now you're in the boardroom, now you're pitching stuff? Like, do you make that switch also during, like, when you're presenting something? Like, is that now your mindset?
Yeah, I mean, I think I learned from modeling as well how to be marketable and how to package yourself. So like, whenever I'm meeting someone for the first time or whatever, right? It's like that first impression thing really does play a big difference. Mm-hmm. So like, on top of it, it's not just your looks, it's also what you say. So like, if you have to package yourself that they'll respect you and you level to who that person is that you're talking to, right?
Yeah.
So like, I also did like real estate and it was the same thing. You have to level. You don't want to come off being arrogant and you also don't want to come off seeing like you're a beggar. Like, you have to be on the same level to connect with someone. Yeah. Otherwise they'll treat you a certain way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the whole packaging thing, like go-sees, for example, if you're going for a go-see for LV or going for a go-see for whatever, like a lower brand.
Yeah. A smaller brand. Yeah.
You have to package yourself a different way. Like, I'm not going to come in wearing a wife beater to an LV casting.
But how did you handle it? Because you're, you know, obviously being, I'm not saying that you're shy, but maybe you're on the shy side kind of thing. But even handling the, you know, when people turn you down and say, yeah, you're not right for it. Like, going to so many go-sees and interviews and blah, blah, blah. How did you work on your brain? How do you work on your mind to not let that affect you? Or did it affect you and then you figured a way to fix it later? But that many rejections must play a game in your head.
I mean, my situation was super lucky.
Yeah.
I admit it. Like, so when I started, if we're just talking about modeling right now, like when I was going to go see's, I literally got into every fashion show, like maybe 99%. Like, I had a very low rate of not getting into that fashion show. If there was a fashion show where there was only one or two guys, I was the one or two guy that
usually the one guy,
got in. Like, I just got lucky during that time. How I relate it to other things where I faced rejection, whether it was like real estate or now when we pitch to clients and stuff. I like to think that I'm agile and I can just adapt. So like, yeah. I mean, there's another, when one door closes, I know it's so cliche, but another door is just waiting for you to walk through.
Yeah. I know the reason why I'm asking, because I think that's one of the, you know, one of the main issues for a lot of people to, you know, to fully go in life and everything is the rejection, the fear of rejection, right? To, you know, because confidence plays the big, one of the biggest parts, especially in the beginning of meeting somebody. Like, it needs to be like, again, you found the right like balance of, you're not trying to be cocky, but you're not trying to be like, oh, please hire me. So you found that middle ground and stuff. And, but when you do get rejected, you're right. Like, another door opens. I have a different saying is, you know, when one door closes, build another door kind of thing. Right. I'm not waiting for another door to be open, but that mentality, that attitude kind of came from lots of rejections, and there's going to be even more rejections in the future for me, you know, but that's part of the game. So I wanted to hear, because I know in Monoland, I mean, luckily that you didn't get that a lot, but I think now transitioning to another profession and now you're a creative director with Next Theory. I mean, that for me, we have that in common. We don't have the modeling in common, but we have the advertise, the creative director part in common. And that was for me. I had the same mentality when I went to pitch something. I was the man. Like, that was fucking, like, maybe outside of it, it's like, oh man, I don't know how this interview is going. Okay, let's prepare. Are we ready? And then once that door closes and they said, okay, you guys are up, it changes. Like, presentation, like Jerry Maguire, you own the room. And that mentality, I don't know what it is, because that's, you know, not me outside of that boardroom, but it's kind of like you. So I want to know how you trained your mind, because that's so important for anybody, you know, that's making a change in their life, or they're in the bit, you know, right in the beginning stages as a young entrepreneur or someone who's trying to change their life. That mentality, man, especially now with losing your job and pandemics and unemployment, that's a mind fuck, right? So that's why I was kind of asking you if you got it, and luckily you didn't. But now going into being a creative director, like, how is it now that you made this? It's I think a pretty giant leap in a sense, but at the same time it's not, because you used to work for brands as their brand sponsor, brand ambassador or model. But now in creative, you're kind of doing the same thing. Yeah. You are their ambassador. You are carrying the torch for that brand and saying, this is my product. This is what I believe in. And when you create whatever creative solution that, you know, or content you're going to do, you're basically the brand. So tell me a little bit how, you know, let's start a little bit in the beginning. How the hell did you become a creative director?
Okay. Well, I'm still like, I mean, to be honest, right? Like, I'm still learning the ropes. That's why when I get back to the Philippines, I'm hitting you up and I'm asking for your advice, because you offered to be my mentor, which I want to say again, appreciate it. I still have a lot to learn, right? So being a creative director for Next Theory, it was basically a slow process. So like, aside from modeling, I did a lot of stuff behind the scenes. I was doing creative directing when I didn't know what creative directing was really about, right?
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, I do that anyways. Or basically in other ways, I was doing stuff that I really didn't know I was doing. But I did PR stuff, like helping as simple as selecting seating lists, or, you know, who the KOLs for certain campaigns were, to making creative concepts for events.
Yeah.
So basically with Next Theory, me and Vicky, we just sort of came up with this. We did this event, right? So like, me and Vicky, I've known Vicky since she was like 16. Mm-hmm. And through John and Rosario and Tina and Teresa, obviously her whole family, they're like, I was like an adopted brother at one point, I'd say. Yeah. Like, I've crashed over at their place. I've met their mom. Like, I've invited them to dinner with my parents when they were visiting the Philippines. But yeah, so I've known Vicky for a long time. We did this Heineken event, and I basically went up to Vicky and I was like, hey, why don't we do this on a bigger scale? Why don't we try and pick up more clients and not just do this one event? And, you know, it has legs. I think with all the experience that we've had, like, people have seen us for, like, you know, I don't know. I've been in the Philippines for 17 years. So say 15 years around and about establishing ourselves and our own personal brand. So we have the trust of a lot of people. Yeah. And during that time, we met a lot of people, whether it's on the basketball court, like, I've met brand managers that I didn't know are brand managers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that was basically the birth or the reincarnation of Next Theory, because obviously that started with Vicky in Hong Kong first.
Yeah.
She asked me if I want to take on the role as creative director. And like I said, like, I'm still learning a lot of things, but I embraced it because, I mean, for me, I've always thought that I haven't, like, it's either, well, one or two things. I see the trend before it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, ever since I was a little kid, like, whether it was through fashion or music or whatever, like, I could see what was going to be hot before it was hot. So basically I accepted that role and wanted to take on the challenge to, like, create stuff, bring people together in the Philippines in a way that hasn't been done, because other agencies in the Philippines, I feel like they work, they have, like, a certain formula already. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it gets, like, so boring. So it's not, they're not really being creative anymore. Like, they know how to do their job. They do it well, but it's not cool anymore. It's just like, you go to the same event or whatever, and it's the same people, the same mm-hmm. program, the same everything. So we want to sort of disrupt that
mm-hmm.
and bring it back to, you know, the time before there was, like, all the social media and everyone was gearing everything towards, like, all those metrics of likes and numbers and mm-hmm. follows, and be authentic to the event to make it cool. Cause, like, there's events you'll go to and, like, it's hitting all those metrics, but do you remember it the next day? Or is it something to talk about? Is it something you can talk with your friends about 10 years and be like, that event was so sick? I don't know if those events happen anymore. With COVID happening right now, I don't know. That's obviously shaken up the whole everything, right?
But that can be a good thing. That's a good thing too in the industry, right? When you get a shakeup, it kind of shakes out the ones that shouldn't, that don't belong there. You have to really kind of mix it up now and really start putting creative behind it. And I guess, you know, you mentioned in the beginning that I'm going to be mentoring you. And one of my first advice to you is you have to stop saying that, you know, oh, this is new for me. No, you're not. Like, you're creative the day you were born, right? And that's makes you where you are today. And for you, yes, you're learning, but everyone's learning. I'm learning even now. I've been in the business, or I retired, but I did it for 20 years. And I know to my 20th year, I was still learning. I was still listening. But that's your superpower, is that you have the pulse of what's going on. And you can see what trends are coming before they're happening. And my biggest advice to you is that you have to listen to that voice. Because that's where creative directors at the tail end of their career, or they're not getting, you know, the buzz, whatever, is because they stop listening to that voice. It's kind of like everyone says, listen to that inner child of yourself. Like, you do, when you're creative, you have to listen to your inner child. And I have my opinions about, you know, for me, for advertising and creative directors in the creative department, I've always said that a lot, and not going to say all of them, but probably a big chunk of them, when they get a creative brief and they're coming up with ideas with the client, for the client, their main goal most likely is to win an award, right? And to win an award, that equates to more money, right, for them. So they can go to the creative director or their bosses and says, hey, I won this award at Clio. I won this at Lion. I want more money, right? But for me, as a business owner, and I have my businesses, if I hired an agency, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh, I hope they're going to win an award from this. I want them to fucking put my business number one and come up with the best creative solution that it, even if it doesn't win awards, who gives a fuck? But if the ROI and we get the, you know, the response that we needed, then that's why I hire you. That's why I'm paying you the retainer, or that's why I'm paying, you know, your fees, not so you can win an award. And that's where I think where it lost. That's where I think advertising creatives jumped the shark, was when they did that, when creatives, and I know that I was in trenches, man. And there's, I'm not going to name the creative directors, but it's like, hey, maybe we can win an award on this. I'm like, in my back of my head, it's like, I don't want to win an award. I don't care if it gets me more money. I want to do what's right for the client. And that's what I respect between you and Vicky. Like, you guys are doing it for the clients. Like, I know that for sure. And I know Vicky very well too. You know, I've worked with her, and it's about what's best for the client. And that's what separates you
the
guys.
The service still at the end of the day, right? Like, we're a service.
We're glorified salespeople. That's what we are. That's, you know, we have a glamorous job. Yes. Like, I've flown to Miami and shot for 14 days. That was amazing. But in the end of all, what does that mean? I'm a salesperson. That's it. I'm there to sell your product. So that's what I love, your mentality and the fact that, and I know you're creative. I've seen your posts. I see how you are. You kind of push the boundaries, even clothing. You don't dress like everybody else dresses, kind of thing. And that's what separates you. You know, that's why I always like Kanye West. And even though he does the stupidest things and says the stupidest things, but he also has, he knows what's going to be hot before it gets hot. Like, I don't like
Yeezys. He's pushing the boundary. Like, he doesn't wear.
Yeah, you have to push the boundary. Yeah. So that's your job as a creative director, is push the boundaries. Like, no, okay, I'm not going to follow this trend. This is where it's going. And then push it. So for me, you're already there. You're already at the same level because everyone's still learning. If a creative director there in the Philippines is saying, well, I have the Emmy Awards, or I've been working, I don't give a shit. What have you done? What was your last campaign? You know, that's, I want to see results, right? And that's what I think for you, that's your superpower, is because you do know what the next trend is before it even gets hot. So for me, start listening to that inner voice, man, and stop saying that, oh, I'm new. Oh my God. No, that guy that was walking down the runway, bro, that own it, that's you. That's the creative director that your client wants to have on their team. And that's why they pick you guys. That's why. So it's exciting, man. That's awesome. Like, we, you know, I love being creative director, and I can see that for you. You're like, whoa, this is it. Right. And that's, so do you feel that this is like, you become you're a real estate agent, you're playing basketball, you know, you get modeling. I don't know if you did acting, but I'm assuming you probably did because of the Philippines. That transition, man. I mean, I'm loving it because that's the whole thing about owning it and, you know, going all in life is trying different things and trying to figure out who you are and say, okay, I love where I'm at right now. Right. So yeah, man, like that's my first advice to you, bro. Like, you said it. And I've always wanted to say that to you. It's like, bro, you're doing it already, man. We're on the same level. We're both learning and we're pushing. But if anything, if I had a project, creative project, and it was between me creative directing or you, I would say, no, you do it, because you're more in touch with the pulse than I am. And that's what your superpower is, bro.
I mean, thank you for those words. Like, I'm really going to take those to heart. Like, I think sometimes you just need to hear that to, like, follow that voice, because I mean, you put up your own barriers sometimes and you're scared if your ideas are good, but I do know that they're good. So I just need to, you know, go for it more.
Yeah. Just take the leap, man. What's the worst thing going to happen?
All in, right?
Go all in. And I think one of the you tell me, your life is probably a little bit different, but you know, because you lived in Toronto. When did you move? Were you born in Toronto, or you moved there when you were small?
Yeah, I was born in Toronto.
And your parents, how long had they been living in Toronto?
Well, probably like about 40 years now.
Wow. So how was that, like when you told your parents you're going to go to the Philippines? Like,
yeah.
I mean, that must be, like, I know my parents, well, my parents were actually happy with it because they knew, but if I said that earlier in my career, like when I was 20, they would be like, what are you doing? Right. So what was your reaction when you said, I'm going to go to the Philippines, where they left?
Well, I mean, my parents, I can't say this enough, have been the greatest support system in my life. Like, my dad is a doctor, and there's certain things when you think of a doctor, like strict and, you know, all those things. And yes, he was when I was younger, and my mom worked at Campbell Soup. But basically, yeah, they're just such an amazing support system. So any way that I went, they were always there 100% to support me. So, like, I mean, even now, as I got engaged with Jana, I think one of the greatest things she's getting out of this is that she becomes part of our family, because that's how much I think of my parents and how supportive they are, and just, they're just amazing. They were, I mean, I'm sure they had their hesitations when I moved to the Philippines, but at the same time, my dad and my mom would collect all of my magazines and put it in my dad's office for the patients to see, which embarrassed the shit out of me, because, like, a lot of the stuff that I was doing before there was, like, fast internet, like, I didn't really want my friends back here to see it, or, like, but my parents were very proud and supportive, so.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, the reason why I brought that up, too, is I think that's another obstacle in going all in, and especially, let's, you know, in the world of being an entrepreneur and starting your business. I think, you know, I'm noticing a trend with Filipino parents that left the Philippines, started a new business in the, you know, in Toronto, a new life in North America, wherever they're at. I feel like they're more supportive when you say, you know what, I'm not going to be a doctor, mom. I'm not going to be a nurse. You know, I want to start my own business. I don't know. I'm going to do something. And they're more supportive. You try to do it here. You're like, what? You're not going to, you're going to school. You're going to Ateneo. You're going to LaSalle. You're going to be a doctor. No, you know, and I feel like that's one of the biggest obstacles. And that's why I already knew the answer before I asked it, but it's kind of like, yeah, chances are, you know, Brent had really super supportive parents because they lived in the, you know, Toronto over 40 years. Same with my parents, identical way, you know, that they were so supportive. But if they lived here, I don't think I would be in front of this microphone, because I would have been a lawyer, doctor, politician, or something, right?
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm bringing that up is that I want to, you know, hopefully, you know, when people listen to this, is that, yeah, you know, it's great to listen to your parents, but you got to listen to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it'll be great if your parents can support you. And maybe a parent's listening to this podcast, you got to let your kid do it. You know, I have two kids, so I'm not just speaking out of, oh, I don't know what I'm talking about. I have two kids, one's turning 21 in a few days, and the other one's 18. I know that, but let them make the mistakes, man. Let them, and that's what, I think that's why the entrepreneurship ratio in the Philippines is a lot lower, right? Because it's not as glamorous or as, I don't know what the word is, but being a doctor or a lawyer. Right. Did they want you to become a doctor, by the way? Because your dad's a doctor.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, they also pushed me very hard when I was a kid. Always like, you're going to be a doctor. You're going to be a doctor. You're going to be a doctor. But I mean, when I finally made my decision and they knew I was going to be a doctor, then they were very supportive on that path. But yes, I heard it a lot that they
wanted. Do you have any siblings?
Me or my sister. Yeah. My sister, to be honest, what ended up with her, so like, she didn't want to be a doctor either, because like, my dad's generation, so my dad's a doctor, his brother's a doctor, sister's a nurse, they're in the medical field, so me and my sister got the pressure, like all our cousins, to go into the medical field. So my sister wasn't doing that either, So she ended up taking law, and I think she graduated with law, but she didn't take the bar. So she just did it, I think, to like please my parents that she was graduating with like something good. But at the end of the day, she's still doing something medical. So she's like the director of operations for stem cell clinic here in Toronto.
Oh, wow.
So she ended up in medicine in a way anyways.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But it does say that, okay, you know, your parents might want you to do this, but at the end of it, I think Filipino parents, they love their kids. They're going to like, all right, fine, you know, do what you have to do. We'll support you and be there when you need us kind of thing. So no, it's interesting because I've talked to a few people, especially at the Refine, how they got into the professions. And that's usually, oh, my mom wants me to be a doctor. No, she really wants me to be a doctor kind of thing, right? And it's like, yeah, but what do you want to do, right? And so I always want to get that.
In the Philippines, it's the whole family business thing.
Yeah.
Right? So like if you're born into a family business, they want you to be in that family business and carry on after they've passed away. And
yeah, yeah. But the new trend right now that I'm seeing in the Philippines is being a franchise owner. Get into franchising, like franchise, buy a business, like get a franchise. I went to the franchise show in Toronto and It was sad. There was probably, you know, maybe one floor at a convention. It was really small. It was probably about maybe 100 or so, maybe 100 stalls of different franchise. Then I went to the franchise show in the Philippines about a couple of years ago. Holy crap, Brent. There was like over 3,000 freaking stalls of franchises. Buy this, Euro this, pancakes this, waffle this, bubble tea, lots of bubble tea this. And I feel now that's instead of being an entrepreneur, you're like, oh, I want my own business because I want to have a paycheck, right? And that's a different kind of entrepreneur is they're doing it because they want to control their paycheck. So they own a franchise. And then if that hits what, then they expand it and stuff like that. But that's what I'm starting to see, which is a good start. I mean, but there's a lot of crazy bubble tea franchises here. You know what I mean? So
for sure,
that, the reason why I'm asking you that one is that, you know, what's your thoughts with all these small business franchising? I'm always thinking that they also need creative help. So
yeah.
What's your thoughts with that, within role of Next Theory, with being a creative director, like that kind of avenue, that industry that's growing really fast?
For the franchisees and how we can help, I mean, I haven't given it much thought, but basically like we're open to, I mean, with us and selecting who we work with, we don't want to, like, a franchisee already is sort of a diluted brand.
Yeah.
Right. So like, I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, the reason why I'm asking, because this is more an open conversation. It was kind of like, I had that thought was, chances are you can't go straight to the franchisee. They have to go to the franchisor.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you can find, I always, you know, this has always been like a formula in advertising is, look at the ones that are doing poorly, right? Approach the franchisor, the company, the head place, and say, this is what we want to do for your company. But you have to give us creative freedom to do what we feel is best. And then, because I'm always thinking those are the ones, and we've done it a couple of times, you know, in advertising back in the day when we were building our portfolios, we would approach, you know, a small dog shop or whatever, you know, barbershop or whatever, and help them out. And usually that, if they allow you to do the creative freedom, because chances are you won't get that creative freedom with any other agents or any other client. I always think that's something that, you know, and I'm not saying that this is what Next Theory should do or anybody else, but I feel like that's a good opportunity to kind of like flex your creative muscles. It's like, I don't like the branding. I don't like the thing. Wait a minute. Okay. I want to know, there's a challenge for me. And that's, I think for me, I always find the challenge when I got a creative brief, you know, on my desk to come up with anything. Okay, here's a challenge. Yep. This is tough. That's the ones I wanted one. So I that's why it was more of an open conversation with you, just kind of as a creative director to another creative director, is your thoughts on bad branding, bad advertising, bad communications. How do you fix that? As that's our job.
I mean, ideally, you'd like to have full creative, you know,
license
to do whatever you want. But I mean, in the real world, someone's always sticking in their nose and, you know, stopping the whole process. Like, that's from my experience in the Philippines, right? Like, the business owners, the owners, they're so old school. Like, they have their formula and they just want to do it that way. And they're never wrong. And what they're doing is right. So, I mean, you don't get to meet too many people that are open to having that conversation even. We got lucky. So, like, we're actually in talks with someone right now that is like, we want you guys to be our sauce. Meaning, we don't want you to do what everyone else can do. We want you to tell us where, and it's like, oh, wow, this is so cool. We can literally think up whatever we want and have it done. Yeah. And that's like perfect, right? But I think in most cases, you don't get that client. Most of the clients, they're stuck in their own ways, and it's a little bit of a tougher conversation.
Yeah, and I think that's where, hopefully that's what, you know, we need to start talking about that more, about the creative process, because, you know, one of my creative mentors back in the day, he was like long, long time ago when I was in school still, he told his client, I don't go into your factory to tell you how to make jeans. Don't go to my fucking agency to tell me how to make ads. You know, you came to us for a reason. Trust us. And that's always been a battle. Trust me. And as soon as advertising has been around, is I think clients not letting go. And it's funny, the ones that did let go, and I guarantee those are the big ones, that's why they're the big names. They let the person do their job. And, you know, for you, I think that's why, you know, why I'm mentioning this is that, you know, if somebody hears this, I want them to, you know, take a look and allow them to do, you know, let you guys do your creative thing, because that's what you're paid for. You know what I mean? If it was so easy, then you do your ads, do your branding, do your communication, do whatever you need to do creatively, and you'll be good. But for us as in that industry, or you're in the industry, to let it go. That's why I'm actually bringing you guys on board for one of my businesses, right? You guys are actually going to be the secret sauce of how we're going to make this explode, right? The communications, because that's, I know Vicky, I know you, but you know, my conversation with Vicky, I'm like, you do what you have to do. You guys, this is your thing. That's not my thing. We created it. We did it. Now you launch it. Like, you know what I mean? And that's what, you know, people hopefully listening to this, if you're, you know, a business of any sort, you have to start getting in that mentality. Let us do our jobs. You know what I mean? It's like, there's so much, and I get it. Trust me, having a business myself, I know there's like people I have to answer to, and if it doesn't work, oh, frick, right? So it is a scary, scary moment, right? So, I don't know. I mean, there's so much stuff that as a creative director, we have to think about. And that's what I love. You know, I love when I was a creative director. So what is for you for being creative? Do you do anything outside of Next Theory to flex your creative muscle? Because I know that's usually one of the biggest problems for any creative, is to stay creative.
Yeah, well, I also own a store called The Nines over in Uptown Mall, BGC. And I act as creative director there too. So like from our partners, we've got great partners, but I guess from the six of us, I'm the one that has the most experience. So like a lot of the, if there are any cool ideas that come from the store, that usually comes from me.
Nice.
We all, you know, pitch in where we can, but I think they trust me enough that if I come up with a good idea, then we roll with it. And that's basically how it's been since we started. And we started like 4 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So I run the shoots there, production of shoots. basically anything that has to do with creative, like not so much the business end. It's my other partner that handles most of the business stuff and sort of defers to me for ideas.
Yeah. So with that being said, I mean, one thing I don't envy is the fashion trends and going into the fashion industry, because I don't get it. Like, I'll be honest with you, man, I'm old and I don't understand Yeezys at all. Like, and then there's some other shoes that the, I can't even say, Balenciagas,
that yeah, put,
like, big fucking boats on your shoe. I don't get it, man. Like, but what is it? What is that mindset for the millennials or the young buyer that's like, oh man, I gotta have that shoe, that really ugly shoe. You know, like, even Supreme, I sort of kind of get the branding, but I don't get the brand. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird. Like, I think fashion is like with the new rappers, I can't even, Tekashi 6ix9ine and his colored hair and mumble rap. And like, what, how do you, like, you're still young, so I guess you understand it. I don't understand it, man. Fucking educate me a little bit. Why is it so cool? Is it cool to be different now?
Well, I'm not that young, but thank you for saying that. But basically, I think everything's, you know, it's the internet. Internet blew up stuff. So like, people and their own personal style. There's not so many people that that have enough personal style, because there's fashion and there's style, right? So people, a lot of people are fashionable, meaning that they'll hop on the trends, like Balenciaga shoes, Yeezys or whatever, because they see other people wear it or famous people wear it.
Yeah.
But is it actually their style? No, like, I mean, style is different. Like, you can see someone that doesn't wear all that hype shit and they can pull off a good outfit and they're stylish, as opposed to someone who's basically a fashion humper, or, you know, just looks at what Kanye's wearing and just has to be that first person that's wearing it in their circle or post it on Instagram first before everyone else. And that's what right now with retail.
Yeah.
First, and how much its resell value is worth, even
it's
if
like a business. Issues.
Yeah. It's just like, it's, I mean, for example, Adidas is a great brand. No issues with it. But like, when NMDs, like, they were really cool shoes in the beginning.
Yeah. Right?
And they were hard to get. Then all of a sudden, you start seeing the whole family wear it. I mean, like, the little kid, the mom, the dad, the grandpa. Literally, I seen it.
Yeah.
And like, at that point, it's like, okay, this is not cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't, ever since, I've never thought that there was a lot of stylish people. It's just more, do you have
the disposable income
to afford certain things?
Yeah.
And that's your advantage. You got rich parents, or you're rich, so you can buy cool stuff. Doesn't make the way you dress cool.
Yeah, you know what you find, and I do see that. Like, I see people that really don't fit, even though they're dressed to the nines, literally, like, using your term, with, you know, LV belt or whatever. But I just look at them, it's like, wow, you, that's not style, man. That's just, you're just wearing the most expensive stuff on your body.
You're just wearing the height.
Yeah, like,
last year they were probably wearing boat shoes every day.
That's why I think Pharrell, for me, is my, like, style god. Pharrell wears whatever he effing wants, and he makes
it. Yeah, you can wear a Chanel bag, and it's dope. It's super dope.
And it's dope, and it's like, oh, yep, he suits that. He can pull it off, like that whole everyone says you can pull it off kind of thing. Because your style is different, man. Like, I, you know, you're not the traditional, you know, the way you dress is different. Like, when I see you at the Refine, I'm like, oh, it's like, I mean, it's not my style, but it's, you own it. That's the thing, right? And that's, you know, that's what I find so confusing, how to communicate with millennials. Like, how do you, or younger buyers, how do you communicate? Is it just like, hey, now let's get some influencers, and that's, you know, throw the influencers so that way they buy it? I don't know, man. It's so confusing. It's always changing too. Like, Nike's I'm starting to get a little bit. Like, I'm not a sneakerhead by all means, but I do like certain shoes from it. But, and I understand the business sense of it, which is freaking awesome. It's like when they line up, you know, people think, oh, they're going to spend that much. No, no, they're going to make that much, you know, yeah, when they resell it. Like, are you a sneakerhead?
Yes, I am. I'm not like your top tier sneakerhead. Like, I can go to sleep if I miss out on a sneaker, but there are certain ones where it's like, yo, I'm trying to hit up everyone I know and see if I can get a pair. But I mean,
but are you only dedicated to like Nike
or any sneaker? I am a Nike guy. No, I'm a Nike guy.
Yeah.
That's ever since. I mean, that's what I used when I was an athlete in high school or whatever. I love Nikes ever since.
Yeah. So for me, it's Nike I like and New Balance. I don't know. New Balance is not like, oh, I want, I feel like it's, I don't know, maybe it is an older generation shoe, but I still love the feel and the fit of it. And I, you know, when you do wear it to work out and stuff, I still have Reeboks that I still wear, Reebok pumps that I usually wear at the gym, right? And even Reebok is, I don't know, I guess Reebok, there's some shoes I've been seeing that sneakerheads are getting into, they're looking at that. But yeah, I mean, it's a confusing, and that's why I think creative directors, you have a tough job. Because like going back to what I said, you have that superpower that you know what a trend's going to be before it hits that, because that is so hard to figure out. Because I know myself, I can't figure it out, man. Like I see kids wearing stuff. I'm like, what the hell is he wearing? But then again, I am a lot older. So I sound like my dad when I was wearing fucking crazy stuff when I was young.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I have the same sentiments. Like, I mean, when I was younger, I mean, it's just part of the process too, as a kid. If you've got the money, why not? But at the end of the day, like, are you going to wear it next season? Or like, I mean,
I don't know. Are you going to, now that you're, and again, that's, again, your superpower, but would you ever also dabble, or unless you already have, because I've seen your Instagram stories and I always wanted to ask you that. Are you slowly also kind of transitioning into fashion and creating your own brand, like clothing, shirts? Like I saw the tie-dyes shirts and stuff like that. So what's, is that just your avenue of just, hey, I want to be creative. That's it.
It's that, but I mean, also, I don't know. I feel like ever since I've always wanted to create a brand and just never, well, I mean, what, I don't know, a barrier I put up, and a lot of people have told me I should have like a long time ago, but, it's always been on my mind. Am I going to start a brand? Yes. I don't know. I don't have a business plan for it, or I don't know what exactly how that's
going to. But is it something like in your heart that you, aside from barriers and how to create the business plan and all that stuff, is it something like if you can snap your fingers or rub the genie bottle, is that one of your, you know what? Yep. I want to create a brand.
100%. Like, I mean, other than playing in the NBA, it would be starting a brand, and being able to show, I mean, being successful at it, like whether that means showing at fashion weeks or just having it in like 100 different doors or having it globally distributed in like different countries, like that is a dream of mine.
Yeah, for sure. That's why I'm asking, because I was kind of, I'm leading you to the water kind of thing. It's like I sense that of you, the multiple times that we met. Looking at, I follow you on Instagram now, and I see what you're doing. It's weird because it's like I recognize that you're already a creative director before you even have. And you, the thing you have is that you are creating a brand. And I don't know, for me, is the number one rule for any person that's in that level, creative director, CEO, or whatever, you have to create your own brand as yourself. You know what I mean? I think branding yourself is huge for your company, because once they know you, they know Next Theory and everyone around. Like even Victoria, she has her own brand. We know who she is and what she represents. That's who she is, right? Same thing for you. I feel like you're right at the I guess the word precipice of just right there on the edge. And as soon as you launch this, and I think that's what I'm trying to do, is to encourage you to build your brand as Brent Javier, because that's huge, man. Like I always say, name me the CEO of Ford Canada. Do you know who he is?
No.
I have no idea who he is. Name me the CEO of Tesla.
Elon Musk.
There you go. That's,
yeah,
that's your answer, right? That he, because Elon has branded himself,
right? Well, I mean, that's part of the packaging thing that I was sort of talking about. I've always leveraged my brand to get myself into doors that, like, I mean, if I wasn't myself, or if I didn't like pave the way by modeling for how many years or whatever, then maybe I don't get certain meetings or people don't talk to me.
Exactly.
But I've kept it there, like working that angle of leveraging my personal brand to be able to open up doors or build doors.
But I think your tipping point might be is your fashion. Yeah, man. Don't worry about the business plan. Like, honestly, don't worry about, like, your barriers is your head. And I know that enough about you is that you do create these barriers wherever it came from. I don't know. Maybe it's because you came here to be a basketball player, then you got hurt and blah, 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 and didn't work out. That, you know, something that you wanted, and then, oh, shit, it didn't happen. So there's your barrier. That everything you do is, well, I wanted to be a basketball player, but look what happened. It didn't work out, right? So there's people carry that barrier, you know, something traumatic or something happened that they think it was not that big of a deal, but it was a big deal because everything they do, they actually jeopardize it from becoming what it's supposed to be. But for you, that's one thing. Oh man, if you don't worry about those stuff, man, like you're a creative person, man. You'll figure it out later. Create the stuff, because I'm actually really, like, I'm looking at your stories and I'm actually enjoying the stuff that you're making. You know, I mean, I'm like, oh shit, that's pretty cool. And it just, because it shows your authentic self coming out. And I think that's what people buy into so fast, is this person's being authentic. And that's why I think for me, Pharrell is as amazing as he is, because he's the most authentic artist, one of the most authentic artists out there. He puts out, and you know, when he creates a song or clothing line or whatever, you know, that's him. So that's where I think, you know, for you, man, I'm looking forward to it, man. Like to for you to launch that, to create that. I'm actually pushing you really hard to get it started. Because what are you waiting for? The question I have is, what are you waiting for?
I mean, I really don't have a good answer for that. Maybe the basics, just the startup costs and everything like that. You know, there's certain things that need to be handled first before I can make moves, but you know.
I mean, that's just for, like, me as a creative director, that's huge, man. As a creative director for Next Area, that's a huge thing, because people, the way I see it too, if you can brand your own brand, other people are going to be coming to you and says, oh my God, I love what you did with this brand. Can you brand? I think there was an agency. Fuck, I can't remember what it was. Oh man, it's tip of my tongue.
What happened with collabs, right?
Yeah.
You build a brand and people want to collab with you because of how well you've made your own.
Exactly, collab. And then there was another place, I think it's called Koji. Koji is a sushi fusion food truck in LA. And I heard the way that started was, it was a graphic house that wanted to show their graphic talents, and they're brand new. They wanted to show what they can do. So they put up this food truck called Koji, and they started. But what happened was the food truck became so popular that they expanded to, I think, 20 trucks. But it started as a graphic house saying, oh, and now that graphic house is like, well, can you brand me? Can you brand me? Can you brand me? Right. And I think that's for you, is that's your secret sauce, man, with what you're doing and what Victoria is doing too, man. It's like, she's making so much moves and I love it. And it's inspiring. The moves she's making, the moves you're making, you guys are like unstoppable. Right. And it's, you know, it just, if anything, it elevates Next Theory to the next level, because you guys are breaking the mold. You are, that's what I love about, and that's why, again, I'm using you guys as my shop, because you guys are breaking the mold. Like, you're doing it differently than everybody else. And that's what I want, right? And for me, it's like, I get inspired by the creative, you know, you as you know, for Victoria, but for you as a creative director, that you know exactly what I'm going through because you're doing it yourself, right? That's, you know, I think we talked about that. You're the owner of your company. So I respect that. I really respect that. And I'm like,
at the business of you, right?
Yeah, you're in the business of you, right? And if you can brand you, oh my God, I can't imagine what you're going to do for the project that we're, you know, signing you with. Because we're excited about that, our project, this side project that we're doing. And I've, like I said, I've talked to Victoria about it, that we're excited about it. And it's going to be, I feel it's going to be a game changer. But we're putting a lot of trust in you and also putting our hands up and says, you guys are the experts. We built the product. Now you communicate it, right? Use your creative ways to,
let's go.
To do. Oh, it's exciting, right? And that's what, you know, you want to surround yourself. Let's do it. Yeah. And that's what it's inspiring. I think for you, why I'm also saying this, because, you know, the whole purpose of All In is also to inspire others. You know what I mean? So, and I told this to February Bank, Christopher, in the last podcast, is that we have the responsibility to inspire the next.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, we won, and I'm going to say it again, won the lottery to move to Canada, to move to Toronto, to get the education we got, to live the life we did. Now we went back to the Philippines. It's our duty, our responsibility to give back. Right? If it's not through money, it doesn't have to be through money and donations. I think it has to all to do with inspiring and empowering my employees, your employees, to like, this is not, there's no ceiling in life. This is one thing we learned about North America. Fuck ceilings. We don't have a ceiling. We break through that ceiling if you put it, or we'll look for someplace else to go. That's the same thing that we have to inspire and motivate our local, our Filipino brothers and sisters to say, you got to reassess your life, man, because there is no ceiling. So they're only going to do that if you're doing it yourself, right? Yeah. So that's why I'm pushing you to get that started, because people are watching you, man. People are watching you, and they're watching February Bank, and there's no excuses. Well, they're only doing it because they are from Toronto or they're from Cali, so they get to do that. They're probably rich. No, we're hungry. And that's why I think that's your purpose, one of your main your purposes. Unfortunately, that's the purpose we were given, is to pay it back and inspire the next. And that's why I love Nerez. He has that podcast vlog called Inspire the Next.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, it's not a coincidence. All of us fucking know each other because we are like-minded individuals, the same mindset and inspiring. And
same frequency.
We're on the same frequency. And bro, your reach on Instagram, you don't think you can inspire your followers, the people that are like, that's, you know, I guarantee when they see you doing your shit, they're like, fuck. But we need to do more of it. That's what wakes me up in the morning, bro. It's like, I need to motivate. I had this talk with my employees last night and says, this is it. We got it. We got this, right? It's not about survival mode, bro. This is about adapting, going global. Everyone's part of this. If you're part of it, come on, let's do it. If you're not, go find somewhere else to work. You know, we're only taking, you know, the soldiers and we're going to fucking march through this and get through this pandemic. You know what I mean? Everyone's making moves. Everyone's adapting. So that's where I think for you, you know, you have this huge responsibility. And I told that to Christopher, and I think it kind of woke him up too. And I think I want to wake up every single person, especially if you're fucking from North America, Europe, whatever, you're a balik bayan. I'm sorry, man, but you have a responsibility to inspire that person at this on the streets. You know, they need to know that, no, if I can do it, you can do it. Let's do it together, right? So that's my little, you know, venting. That's my
preach. Thank you for that. Like, that also has woken me up. I mean, yeah, I do want to use my platform more to also inspire people. I think there's always, I mean, just being real about it, like there's always been an issue because like sometimes the Instagram is like, it's not posting, like I try to be as authentic as possible, but it's also a balance of giving people what they like, as opposed to what necessarily I want to post. I've had that struggle before. Really? Or I've had that struggle. Like even up to now, like I haven't posted barely while I've been here. And I ask myself, why is that? And that I think sometimes I feel like I post just because I post what I think people want to see, as opposed to what I'd rather really show. Like if you follow my stories, that's probably more me than my posts, because some of those are like sponsored, or I need to get this post up because, you know, whatever. But yeah, thank you for that. I'm gonna try and gear myself towards that.
Because what's the worst? What's authentic? What's the worst thing gonna happen if you post your authentic self? What's the worst thing can happen? Do you lose 5,000 followers? I don't think that's gonna happen. But do you think you really are going to lose followers? Are you going to, people are going to, you know, push back? No. Everyone loves authentic. But you're also, at the same time, I get it. Not everyone's going to like your shit. You know, not everyone's going to like it. I don't give a fuck. Do you like it? Can you wake up in the morning and feel like, yeah, you know, I did it. I took advantage of today. And I know, you know, so, I mean, I think that's really, there's an opportunity, you know, to be yourself, man. You got to do it. You know?
Yeah.
I would love to, I mean, again, just how I see it. And I've seen it, a little bit of it, but I think this is the time, today is the time, especially with this, what's going on, is to reset.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
How you holding up over there anyways?
It's good. I'm growing my hair. I'm actually going to grow it. I actually cut my hair in the beginning of the lockdown, which I shouldn't. I'm curious how long I could have got it. So right now I'm trying to kind of grow it a little bit and see how it goes. And I mean, knowing me, I just get bored of it and I'll cut it off. But for now, grow my hair. I don't have to, you know, I'm not going out, even though we're GCQ going into MGCQ. I'm still at ECQ. Like, there's no vaccine. There's no treatment. Yesterday, I think there was over 700 new cases. You know what I mean? They do have to open up. They definitely have to open up the economy to get it started. But at the same time, it's still our responsibility to kind of, you know, let's take it one day at a time and be careful and not spread it.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. Over here, people are, you know, been dying to get out. So, I don't know. I also feel like they're not also as responsible over here, like social distancing and all that. Like, they're not super following it.
It's the same thing. I think that's the same thing here. Like, we went out yesterday and we noticed a lot of people were still congregating closely, wearing their masks on their chins, not on their face, not on their mouth or nose, but they cover it. They cover their chin, or they'll cover their mouth, but not their nose and things like that. So I think it's the same everywhere, but at the same time, everyone's gotten the warnings. Everyone's got it. What else can you do except just kind of go with it and adapt to it. And if it spreads, people will see it, you know, but if it does, if maybe it changes, we don't know. Is it the heat? We don't know. No one knows. Even the World Health Organization was saying something like, they think that anybody doesn't have symptoms, it's very rare to spread it, you know, but they also said, but it's also because this virus is so new. It's so unknown. So they don't know how to react to it. They're learning as much as everybody else is. I think everyone's just really frustrated of, you know, what's going on with the world right now, especially with the protests and everything. So I think just a lot of frustrations are building, right? So I think we can only do what we can do for ourselves. So for me, I wear a mask. I don't, you know, I assume that I already have it. Yeah, and I don't spread it, and that's it. But if somebody else doesn't wear a mask or they're close together, who am I to tell them not to? They already know. You know what I mean? They already know what the problem is. So I'm just kind of do what I do. You know what I mean? And tell my staff when they go out, you know, follow the safety protocols, you know, and, you know, call them out on it. But other than that, that's all we can do. You know, it's the same thing. Toronto, US, especially US, Philippines, I think everyone's trying to figure it out. Looks like New Zealand has figured it out. Let's see if people learn from that. But again, there's a lot of factors, especially with the economy and money and people need to make money to pay their bills. It's a scary time. But for us, we're adapting. We're launching a whole bunch of new stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks. It's going to be big.
Yeah, you have home service. I got the text.
We got the home service going. We got other stuff that we pivoted in a new direction that's even stronger and better. With Maven, same thing. We're launching something big for that. So we took this time off to really assess how the company's going, and also because you had to, because of what's going on. And then from there, we go out and do it. And it's one of those things, it's like not guaranteed if it's going to work or not. No one knows. All you can do is do it and don't overthink it, and then see how it goes, and then pivot. If you have to pivot or adapt to it, then do that. But other than that, man, I'm loving how productive I was in the last 90 days. It's been very, very productive. It actually taught me that even when we open, my job is to be that productive. So that whole going in all the time might change a little bit because of I need to do what I'm I was hired to do, right? So there's gonna be there's definitely a shift in that mindset for me. I want to be productive every day. And like I said, last night I was up till 1 a.m. sending some creative over to my team and say, hey, here's another idea I have. What do you think? You know, so yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, again, adapt, and not overthinking shit. Just going out and doing it. What's your plans for tonight? I mean, it's pretty late there now. It's 11:15, so probably go to bed.
Probably Netflix and chill, or I don't know.
That's it. Just probably, chill out, man.
Yeah.
So when's your flight back? Not yet planned, maybe July kind of thing?
No, I mean, I've literally been stuck here. Like, I was supposed to be only 2.5 weeks and all my flights keep getting canceled. But my next flight, which I think is pretty much a sure thing, would be June 24th. So I get back on the 26th.
Yeah, I've been hearing from my friends in Toronto also, July, I think, is because it's always changing. So I think they're crossing their fingers July, first week of July, that should be fine. And again, they just announced, let's see if they do it, but June 16th is MGCQ, Modified General Community Quarantine. So flights, I think, are going to be, are slowly opening. Yeah, yeah, man, I mean, because we gotta get stuff done and get going.
Yeah, I'm ready, man. I've been ready for 90 days, basically, just wanting to get at stuff. I mean, we've been taking care of business with the Next Theory side, but I'm ready to get back to the Philippines.
Sounds good, man. But thank you so much for being on this, man. I really appreciate it. I want to start really bringing in like people to inspire, man. And you know, this is something, you know, I wanted to have you on right from the very beginning of all in. And yeah, talking to Victoria, it's like, yeah, let's do this. Let's start spreading the word of what we do, what we're passionate about, it, and going from there.
Well, I mean, I hope I was able to help some of your listeners get inspired and maybe break the mold, disrupt the system, and, you know, go all in. Yeah. So,
the biggest thing that you can do is, aside from being on this podcast, is doing it. Is doing it, man. This is nothing. What we're doing right now is nothing if they don't see what you're doing and say, oh man, he's going all in. Oh, look at this new stuff that he's launching. Look what he's doing for Next Theory. So I think that's what I'm excited about, to see all that, man.
Cool. Likewise, I'm excited to see all your plans unfold, and hopefully, you know, we'll be a part of it as well. And yeah.
You guys are going to be a part of it for sure, man.
All right, cool.
All right, brother, get some sleep, and we will see you June 24th?
26th.
All right, brother, we'll talk then, man.
All right, bro. See ya.
Thank you. See you, man.
Peace.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to All In, a podcast brought to you by The Refine, a gentleman's lifestyle experience. Visit therefinedlounge.com for more details.